rest of the story. In the lexicon of the airman, there is a no-no word spelled B-U-Z-Z. Buzz. It means to dive and fly low and slow over any populated area. Of course, wartime dive bombing is an accepted military practice, but federal officials frown on any civilian show-off. Most of the buzz jobs that are recorded relate more to a place than a person. We've all heard about the pilot who flew under the London Bridge, but who in all the world can remember his name? Lost in antiquity is the name of the pilot who flew an aero commander through the Gateway Arch at the St. Louis Riverfront. If you want to make a name for yourself, this is not the way to do it. And if you're anybody to start with, it's even worse because entertainer Arthur Godfrey was never forgiven for his arrogant, dangerous buzzing of the Teterboro, New Jersey Tower. In aviation, the buzz word is a bad word. Almost always. Billy Mitchell once did it in a controlled situation, and on purpose he flew low over a ship at sea and dropped a dead bomb down the steam stack of a ship purposely to prove the viability of military air power. That was different. When Paul Harvey first flew at the age of 14, when regulations were much less rigid than now, it was considered fun when taking off from Kansas City's airport to fly under the Missouri River Bridge. And now and again, you'll hear or read of some young Lochinvar demonstrating his new pilot's license by buzzing the home of his girlfriend. It is a hazardous practice. Pull out from a steep dive unless you really know what you're doing can result in a low-level high-speed stall from which there is no recovery. But the temptation remains. Despite regulations, restrictions, and restraints, there's still places on Earth just begging to be buzzed. The Golden Gate Bridge, the empty hangar with doors on both ends. In the movies, they get away with it. And then there's the ultimate target to challenge the discipline of any daredevil, the nation's White House. Today, an airspace reservation is intended to keep unauthorized planes at a safe distance from our White House. But once upon a time, when we were all younger and the airplane itself was less refined, there was an air show in Washington, D.C., and the captain of one airship, airmen will want to know that it was an old Douglas C-54, but it was then new. The captain called his plane the Sacred Cow, and on its sides were painted the stylized head of an eagle, a gaudy expression of freewheeling independence. So it might have been expected, though it was not, that the Sacred Cow left the site of the air show that day and flew unannounced and uninvited toward our nation's White House. And when that plane swooped down for the first time, the roar alerted everybody in the area. The Trumans occupied the White House at the time, and the president had just built the south balcony on the White House. And Mrs. Truman and daughter Margaret, hearing the roar, ran out onto the balcony to see if this was the start of World War III. Now the plane, still flying low, wheeled around the Washington Monument and came back down the mall. And again, a second time, buzzed our nation's White House. Security officers were in panic. The women on the balcony did not retreat inside. They remained. As for this second time, and the last time ever, the plane swooped low enough overhead so that Bess and Margaret Truman could clearly identify absolutely the captain of the airship. I call him the captain of the airship, for he was in command. Others were at the controls, but there is no question he himself was directing the maneuver. And with a with a cheery wave and an ear-to-ear grin, close enough to the roof of the White House so that the ladies he wanted to impress could clearly see the cheery wave and the ear-to-ear grin of President Harry Truman. And now you know the rest of the story.